welcome back to another episode of the Christian Apologist Podcast and YouTube channel. So glad you could join us today. I hope you're having a very blessed Monday. And today's discussion is going to be about, so, you know, we have three arguments, three main arguments, really, for to have evidence for the existence of a theistic God without even referring to the Bible. We have the Kalam cosmological argument, we have the teleological argument, and we have the moral argument. And we can have evidence for a theistic God without even opening the Bible. But how do we get from a theistic God? Like, how do we know it's the Christian God? How do we know it's Yahweh, you know, instead of like a Buddha or some other religion, some other theistic Allah, you know, from Islam? So how can we get to a theistic God, Christianity? How can we get to that? How can we get to Yahweh? How can we get to Jesus Christ? And honestly, the only way we can get to it is by opening the Bible, because that's what we have to go off of. These are just the facts. Now, I do speaking events at like churches and colleges and high schools. And so I have right here on my computer, I have what I use as a presentation to go through the list for evidence that points to Jesus being who he says he was, and evidence pointing to God being Yahweh, not just some theistic God, but Yahweh. And so if you are listening to us on podcast, I highly suggest that you switch over to Spotify to watch this video, if you're not already doing so, because on Spotify, our video, our podcasts are also videoed. So you can see this presentation as we're going through it. If you're watching us on YouTube, you're already good to go. And if you're not wanting to switch over to Spotify, that's fine too. You can just go off of the audio. But I think visually, it's a lot easier to see things and to hear things at the exact same time. So let me get this set up real quick. Shouldn't take too long. And here we go. So, was Jesus who he claimed to be? There's evidence that the New Testament writers were telling the truth. Here is some of that evidence. So some of the evidence is that we have early source writings. For example, Mark was written 70 AD, which is literally 40 years after Jesus' death and resurrection. We have embarrassing testimony from all the Gospels. Every single one of the disciples died a very painful and gruesome death. There was eyewitness details. There's early Old Testament predictions, like in, and I think, in my opinion, the best one is Isaiah 53. If you don't know it, look it up. Google these two words, undesigned coincidences. If you Google those two words, you're going to pull up a whole list of a lot of the things that we're just going to talk about today briefly, because we can't go over everything. And then you got extra-biblical writings like Josephus, Lucian, Tacitus, and so much more. These people were not Christians, okay? So don't misunderstand what I'm saying. These people were not Christians, but they were confirming that the disciples did believe this about Jesus Christ, and that Jesus Christ was a real man. So that's pretty strong evidence, honestly. And then, we have the explosive growth of the church. But there's two main things that we want to discuss here today, because we don't have time to go over everything. We want to talk about the embarrassing testimony, and we want to talk about the painful death, the deaths, because I believe those two things are the strongest evidences that we have that the New Testament writers were telling the truth, Jesus was who he says he was, and God is Yahweh. So let's start off with the embarrassing testimony. First, we have Peter was the leader of the disciples, okay? And yet Jesus called him Satan. That was in Matthew 16:23. Jesus called Peter the leader of the disciples. Jesus calls him Satan. And I'm going to think about this. Why would they put that in there if it wasn't true? I mean, do you think they were just sitting around one day and Mark was like, or Matthew was like, hey, Peter, I think right here I'm going to put down that Jesus called you Satan. Yeah, that sounds pretty good. No, Peter would have been like, no way, dude, let Jesus call you Satan. Not me. I'm the leader of this group. No, sir. So why would they have put it if it wasn't true? Next, we have Peter was a scaredy cat, and he literally denied Jesus three times. He denied him three times because he was scared. What man is going to sit there and write a story about himself and have other people write stories about him and say, look, he was a weenie, he was a wimp, and he got scared, and he denied Jesus. Even though he was with Jesus the whole time, he denied him three times. What man is going to admit to being a wimp? No, men like to be the heroes. They like to be the bold ones. They don't want to be known as scared. They don't want to be known as the wimpy ones. They want to be known as bold and heroic. So it makes no sense of why would they would make that up. And, you know, all but maybe with the exception of one, ran away when Jesus was being crucified. I mean, think about it. Every single one of them, except for the exception of maybe one, ran away when he was being crucified. What man is going to do that? I mean, seriously, no man is going to sit there and say, I ran away. Men don't like that. We are not built that way. At least I'm not. Most men are not built that way. They're not going to admit this. Also, what man is going to admit that the women were the brave ones? The women were the brave ones. The women are the ones that stuck around while the men ran away. See, especially back in these days, it's women were the ones that were supposed to be the ones that were being protected by the men. But yet in this case, the men run away, but yet they admit that the women stuck around. I just don't see why people would put that in there if they're trying to make up just random stories, a lie, and say that women were braver than us. They were the brave ones. We were the weenies. We ran. Why would they do that? You know, and after Jesus was risen and had been in their presence for 40 days, at the end of Matthew, it says that some believed and some doubted. Why would they add that? To me, that's one of the most discriminating ones of them all. Because even after they saw Jesus alive, they saw him crucified, and then they saw him rise to life, and they saw him for 40 days after this, some still doubted that it was Jesus. Why would they doubt? Why would they put that in there? No, they would say that all believed. See, if they were trying to make up a story, they would want to make a story that would make you know for a fact that Jesus Christ was God. They would say everybody believed in him. But no, they are still saying that some doubted even after the resurrection for 40 days. And did you know that Jesus' own family wanted to seize him? Because they thought that he was out of his mind. That's in Mark 3:21. His own family. I mean, why would they sit there and say that this is Jesus, the Messiah, the Son of God, in the flesh, but yet not even his own family? You'd think they would say, oh, his family knew. I mean, his mother was the Virgin Mary. She was a virgin and then gave birth. She was visited by angels that told her what was going to happen. But yet his family, and you know this story went out through the rest of the family. It's not like she just kept this to herself and Joseph kept this to themselves. No, you know they had to mention this throughout some time in these other, you know, their other kids' life on whom Jesus was and how he came to be. But yet they doubted. They would not make that up. They would have said they believed. They wouldn't make that up. That makes no sense. And also, not even his own brothers believed him. That's in John 7:5. That kind of goes with the whole, you know, his whole family thought he was out of his mind, but his own brothers didn't even believe that he was the Messiah. None of them. Jesus was called a deceiver. Jesus was said to be demon-possessed. Let's see, Jesus had his feet wiped. They had him wiped clean with the hair of a prostitute. And did you know back then, that was considered a sign of a sexual advance. That was considered a sign of sexual advance. So if you're trying to make up a story, trying to get people to believe, for whatever reason you wanted to, you were trying to get people to believe that this man is the Messiah, the Son of God, the salvation of the world. He performs all these miracles. He is raised to life. And this is who he is. Why would you sit there and say that other people saw him as a deceiver? Why would you say that other people saw him as demon-possessed? Demon is the exact opposite of God. So why would you sit there and make up a story saying that you want people to believe that this man is the Messiah while others say he's demon-possessed? Why would you make that up? You wouldn't put that in there. You would only put the good things. You wouldn't tell the bad things unless they were true. It makes no sense. Also, did you know there was two prostitutes in Jesus' bloodline, Rahab and Tamar? There was two prostitutes. Why would you sit there and say that this is the Son of God and he has come down for our salvation? Oh, but hey, by the way, in his bloodline, two prostitutes. Why would you make that up? You would want that bloodline to be almost absolutely perfect to show that this is the Messiah. You wouldn't sit there and go through the bloodline and just be like, you know what? This bloodline is too clean here, Mark. Luke, what do you think? What do you think about that bloodline? Yeah, that's a little too clean. Let's throw in a couple of prostitutes in there. How does that make any sense? That doesn't make any sense. And he also had David. David was a murderer, a liar, an adulterer. And even Bathsheba's in there. I mean, seriously, in one of the Gospels, they didn't even want to mention her name. I mean, it was kind of a slap in the face back then because he didn't want to say her name. They said Uriah's wife. They didn't even want to say her name. That's how embarrassed they were and ashamed of Bathsheba. They failed to understand Jesus and a lot of his parables. I have them mentioned right here, Mark 9:32, Luke 18:34, John 12:16. It's like they were dimwitted. It's like they just couldn't grasp it. They didn't understand it. Why would you make yourself out to be an idiot, a moron, and not understanding these parables when anybody can really understand these parables? I mean, you understand that it's exactly not what they were supposed to be. You understand what a parable is, especially back then. Parables were used a lot. We use them today. I mean, all the time. I mean, they're seen in movies all the time. But why would you make it up that you didn't understand it? I mean, this is Jesus, the Son of God, talking to you, telling you you're his disciple, but yet you're not understanding what he's saying? That makes no sense. They were very uncaring. They actually fell asleep on Jesus twice when Jesus was in the Garden of Gethsemane praying. They were uncaring. They just fell asleep. They didn't see it as no big deal. And they didn't even plan for a proper burial, knowing that Jesus already foretold them that this was going to happen. But even afterwards, they did not plan for it. It wasn't even one of his disciples that buried him. They were very uncaring. They really were. The Jewish leaders, okay, now you got to think that every single one of the disciples, except for Luke was a doctor, but every other, of the gospel writers, let me correct myself, every single one of the gospel writers besides Luke was Jewish. Now you got to understand, they were Jewish. They already thought they were saved. They were still expecting the Messiah. So they were literally thrown out of the Sanhedrin after all this came about, and they said that this is the Messiah. They were thrown out, and that was a big slap in the face back then. They were thrown out of the Sanhedrin, and even the Jewish leaders, and Jesus was a Jew claiming to be their Messiah, foretold about in the Old Testament, which they followed. These people were wanting to stone him. Why? Why would they want to stone him unless it was true? He was called a drunkard, you know, and he was crucified. And I understand, like, we're not going to get into all the details of crucifixion, but did you know that a crucifixion, in Deuteronomy 21:23, it says that anyone who is hung on a tree is under God's curse. And that's why the Jewish leaders wanted him crucified, because they wanted to show that Jesus was not the Son of God, but because he was claiming to be the Son of God, that was blasphemous, and that they were going to hang him on a tree so that way he would be under God's curse forever. That was their whole point. Now, why would you want to make up a story about the man that is a Messiah, okay, and then make it into a way that when he died, he was supposed to have been under God's curse? Like, you wouldn't make that up unless it was true. And we all know it's not true, and that's why Jesus you know, rose to life, because he was shown that he wasn't under God's curse. He was deserted by his followers. And then, okay, I don't know if any of y'all know Bart Ehrman, but I'm going to read what he says right here. This is what Bart Ehrman is who they call the great skeptic. Okay, he's an atheist. They say agnostic, but he's an atheist. He doesn't believe in God. But this is what he does say. He says, with respect to Jesus, we have numerous independent accounts of his life and the sources lying behind the Gospels and the writings of Paul. Sources that originated in Jesus' native tongue, Aramaic, and that can be dated to within just a year or two of his life before the religion moved to convert pagans in droves. Historical sources like that are pretty astounding for an ancient figure of any kind. The claim that Jesus was simply made up falters on every ground. So even Bart Ehrman, the great skeptic, is saying that, he's not admitting that Jesus was the Messiah, but he is admitting that Jesus of Nazareth was a real man and that these gospel writers truly believed him to be the Messiah. The reason this says 1 Corinthians 5:15 3-8 on there is because this is actually, it's the earliest evidence that we have of the resurrection. And I'll read it to you real quick. It says, "For what I received, I passed on to you as of first importance, that Christ died for our sins according to the Scriptures, that he was buried, that he was raised on the third day according to the Scriptures, and that he appeared to Cephas and then to the 12. After that, he appeared to more than 500 of the brothers and sisters at the same time, most of whom are still living, though some have fallen asleep. Then he appeared to James, then to all the apostles, and last of all, he appeared to me also, as to one abnormally born." Now, notice, he appeared to more than 500 people after his resurrection. That's 500 witnesses. And I've said this multiple times. In the United States, it only takes two witnesses to convict somebody. There's over 500 witnesses saying that they saw Jesus alive. That can't be a delusion. Not everybody's going to have the same delusion at the same time. I mean, it's not craziness. It's not delusional. It's not, you know, it had to be true because over 500 people saw the exact same thing. Now we're going to move on to what is the painful deaths of the disciples and of the gospel writers. So let's just ask ourselves some questions. What would the New Testament writers have to gain by making up a new religion? I mean, seriously, they were, most of them, like I said, out of the gospels, all were Jewish, but Luke was a doctor. They were thrown out of the Sanhedrin. They were looked down upon. They didn't gain money. They didn't gain success. They didn't gain fame. They were exactly all the opposite. They were beaten. They were starved. They were thrown in prisons. They were exiled. These are the things they got for saying and claiming that Jesus was the Son of God and he did die and rise again. They didn't gain nothing from this. In fact, they had every reason to say the resurrection didn't happen. I mean, seriously, they actually all ended up dying very excruciating, painful deaths, horrible deaths. They had every reason to go back and say, you know what, we just made it all up. We just made it all up. It's all fake. We're sorry. We're sorry. We were just trying to start a new movement. They could have made up anything. They could have made up anything. And they would have been better off than the way they were by claiming the truth. And lastly, why would anybody want to die for a lie that they know is a lie? Why would you do that? Now we can sit there and talk about Allah, and we can sit there and talk about Muslims, how Muslims do suicide bombings and everything else in the name of Allah. But they're dying for something that they think is the truth. Does that make sense? See, they're dying because they think it is true. So that's why they go to their graves believing what they're believing, because they believe it to be the truth. Now, if the gospel writers, we're just going to talk about them real quick, but all the disciples died horrible, excruciating, painful deaths. But the gospel writers, let's just stick with those for right now because that's who we're talking about. That's who brought Jesus into the New Testament. Why would they die if they knew what they were saying was a lie, why would they die for that? Why would they go through all the torment and the suffering that they went through over a lie? Because see, they would have known it was a lie. They would have known. So they could have recanted at any time, but they never did. They stuck to their story because it was the absolute truth. So I'll make it very clear. The New Testament writers didn't create the resurrection. The resurrection created the New Testament writers. It wasn't the other way around. Just like a lot of people nowadays sit there and say, well, you have to read, like I hear a lot of Christians say this, you have to read the New Testament to know who Jesus is and to learn about Jesus and everything else. And I'm like, no, you don't. I mean, you can, it helps to know whom he is. Okay, but you don't need the Bible to be saved. In fact, I mean, if you think about this, all the Gospels, Paul, the apostle who wrote over 70% of the New Testament, they didn't have the New Testament writings. They didn't have the what we call the Bible nowadays. They didn't have that. They were writing it. They were talking it. They were living it. They didn't have it, but yet they were saved. You don't need the Bible to be saved. All the people in the Old Testament, Moses, Aaron, name them all, David, none of them had the Bible, but yet they were all saved. You don't need the Bible to be saved. And the New Testament writers, they didn't just create and come up with the resurrection. The resurrection happened, and that's why we have a New Testament. There's the difference. Now, am I saying this is 100% proof? No. But it's very, very strong evidence, more than any other religion out there, of Jesus being exactly whom he claimed to be. These gospel writers claiming Jesus is who he is all the way up to the point of suffering and death. All the disciples saying it all the way up into death. And then you have all the extra writings outside of the Bible from people that weren't even Christians or believed in that Jesus was the Messiah or believed in Yahweh, but said that Jesus of Nazareth was a real man. They say that Jesus, that the gospel writers believed it, that Jesus was the Messiah. So there's plenty of proof that, or evidence, let me say that. There's plenty of evidence that Jesus was who he claimed to be, and that the New Testament writings are completely and utterly true. You all have a blessed week. Oh, and before I even let y'all go, comments. If you agree with me, if you don't agree with me, send them down below. Even if you're writing this on a podcast, you can send it to us down below. We have an email. Email us. It's going across down below. So let us know your thoughts. Let me know what you think. And just let's discuss this. Let's go through this journey together. But this is why I believe the evidence for the New Testament is 100% true. God bless.